Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast, Swagoo and Perk, an ESPN podcast led by its namesake hosts, Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins. With new episodes every Tuesday, Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as take a look inside their lives, career journey, with can't-miss conversations. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcast, and also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Also, thanks for watching on YouTube. And it is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Not much. It's the last show before the first show.
Yeah, man. I'm sitting here. I'm actually at the office right now. Those of you watching on YouTube, they may crop it out, but the Hudson River right over there, I'm looking at it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's right out there out the window. I go out there. I should give y'all a tour. I can show you the Empire State Building. I got a yoga mat out there for when it's time for me to get loose and limber. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Well, I'm done getting hotels. I'm sleeping in one of your many rooms that you got now.
I'm just saying, I can rent this thing out for $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a month, boy. I could do that, man. But no, we're here. Game Theory with Bomani Jones. Premieres March 13th. Thanks to everybody who checked out Wednesday's episode. I get to work, and Dominique, the first thing somebody told me was, your mom is so cute. And I have to say that lands different with you when you in your 40s and people say that than it would if you was 15. Right? Like, he'd be like, yo, your mom's cute. What that mean?
Yeah, nah, no 15-year-old creeps doing, yeah. You don't want that. I mean, you don't want your mom to be the topic of any conversation amongst 15-year-old boys ever.
No, I was saying, did you have that mom?
Yep, wasn't fun.
See, the thing is, like, my brother is 13 years older than me. So we had the same mom, but he had a different mom as it relates to this conversation. That's a rough go, man. You got to learn how to scrap under them circumstances, from what I can tell.
Yeah, she wasn't nice, though. That cleared that out real quick. She's from New York. Step across the line a little bit, it gets straightened out real fast. So we ain't really had them problems.
No, it's amazing to cast that hat there, Baba, how it, like, linger with them. So one of my former students who's probably listening to this right now, he was kind enough to invite me to a lunch to celebrate his graduation. Like, honestly, one of the biggest honors I've had, right? Like, I taught him and he wanted me to share with him in his graduation. And his parents were there, and I saw his mom, and, you know, I know how to act. So, but we left, and I was like, so it was tough, huh? He ain't find no humor. He ain't find no humor in that whatsoever. He ain't want no parts of that. We asked Steph Curry about that once on Highly Questionable. Nope, no humor. It was just like, yo, it couldn't have been easy, right? He was like, he hated it. Oh, I hated it. I hated every bit of it.
What happened with them? Is that divorce final? It was like a big story for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, it was a big story when Dale didn't want to cut them alimony checks. Something tells me that the money came back and everything calmed down. I mean, look, I don't want to get too far into this because, you know, we try to avoid this. I will just say this about that story of where it was interesting was when that picture turned up of who Sonya Curry was now kicking it with. And I understood Dale Curry like, hold on, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm sending you checks and you hold up with, oh, hell no. Nah. Like, I'm not saying he was right, but I am saying I can see why it was that somebody had to get him to calm down. He's like, no, can't be. Can't be. Yeah.
He doing numbers too, from what I understand. Like, you all right?
That wasn't the point. The point wasn't about that. It is this dude, like, living in the middle of nowhere or something like that, right? Like, I don't know if you are familiar with a rap artist named Big Mike, but Big Mike had a song called Player Player that is absolutely an H-Town classic. And it was just a song all about he got a girl who take her money from some other man and then come, like, give it to him, like, spend the bread on him. And with the classic line, remember that shirt that she got you on your birthday? I got two of those, a pair of pants and shoes on the first date. Oh, and that's what Dale Curry was living. You know what I'm saying? Like, let Dale Curry tell it. Like, yeah, they separated. He don't see it that way. That's still his wife. Let him tell it.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who's ever been through a breakup, I assume, well, I'm post or pre Instagram, so I imagine it's so much harder. Or maybe you just get over it faster because, like,
you
anybody,
gotta turn it off.
Yeah, I guess
you just gotta.
Yeah, people
turn
be
it
like,
off.
They be like blocking people and hiding and stuff. I guess because that's. As depressing as Instagram makes people normally, I can only imagine how bad it is if you just scrolling, then she with a new man.
Now you got to put yourself in a position to be successful, right? Like, I think people like to make themselves miserable in part. Like, they need somewhere to channel the feelings, and then, you know, they get it, and then it goes. And I'm like, I mean, it sounds harsh, but my best friend didn't wake up one day when I was 19 years old. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you just don't talk to people no more. You know,
it's the best thing for you. But I mean, we had quarterbacks moving around, so there might be the Seahawks looking at Instagram next year.
See,
looking at Russ.
See, that was the thing I was just about to say. I was like, speaking of little homies who gonna have to learn how to scrap. Shout out to Lil Fuch. Lil Fuch is definitely gonna have to learn how to scrap. They got another little boy, right? He gonna have to learn how to scrap, and then they might have a little girl who gonna have to deal with the possibility that everybody, because that one, you see that a lot too. Like, the thing we talk about, the dudes having to scrap it out because they got defined mama. But when you the daughter with defined mama, that can add all kinds of different levels of what it is that we talking about. But Lil Fuch over there with Russ, and they guess they're going to be going over to Denver with this trade for Russell Wilson. And I'm curious your read, because let me tell you what my read on this trade is. They must really not like Russell Wilson up there.
Yeah, it's done. The relationship is done. They were polite at the exit, but it feels like if you have a franchise quarterback and a Super Bowl champion franchise quarterback in that city, potential future Hall of Famer, you are not going to get rid of him, even if he wants to. We just saw it with Aaron Rodgers. Like, you make things work. So the power struggle is clear that they have the power in the general manager's office and the head coach's office, and the quarterback didn't, so he moved on. I don't know what they're moving on to get. I know Richard Sherman on his podcast said that he thinks that they're angling for the Deshaun Watson situation, but ain't nothing out there, fellas.
Dog, that was what made me be like, yo, they just must really be through with this dude. You know, because look, one thing about football is in the NBA, you can go in there, guys, I'm unhappy. And, you know, they'd be like, all right, well, we got to get something out of here before you burn this whole thing down. Football don't go that way. You don't know football, guys, I'm unhappy. Me too. How about that? We all unhappy. Pandemic.
It's the nature of the business. You're right.
To me, what's interesting, and you mentioned Sherman, and I'd be very curious to know how Sherman and all those LOB guys feel about this, because they had felt that the organization had done far too much to coddle Russell Wilson, which did not make him the most liked guy on his own team. And I wonder if he looked up one day and it was like, yo, nobody here seems to really rock with me.
Yeah. And Bobby Wagner's gone too. But yeah, I think that those guys view this as like, see, we told you. Like, we told you don't do that. We told you he ain't the guy that you want to give this power to. And we told you that no matter what the rest of the league is doing, this is not the direction you want to go. And it's interesting because it feels like they, part of the problem with why that team did not become the dynasty that I think it probably should have and could have been was because of that split that happened in the locker room. Felt like they were given too much leniency to Russell Wilson from the defense side and too much credit. And now it feels like Russell feels like he doesn't have the power that comes with the respect that they gave him early in his career. And so he's out. Like, that's what it seems like to me, because it comes down to him wanting to play his style of football, whatever that is. I don't know that he's ever really discovered it, but it ain't what Pete Carroll doing. And that's what it seems like the major issue was getting up out from under Pete Carroll's idea of what football is. And that team has not been well constructed since they threw that interception in the Super Bowl.
the Pete Carroll, like, he wants to run ground and pound football. And I think it's easy for people to think about him in the context of, like, Carson Palmer, Matt Leinart with the USC stuff, and they had Reggie Bush. But it wasn't a particularly adventurous scheme that they were running. They just had incredible talent, and nobody could check Mike Williams. Nobody could check Dwayne Jarrett. Curiously, everybody in the NFL could check these guys. But for whatever reason, you know, when they were in college, nobody could check them. The thing with Russell, to me, as a quarterback is, you know my feeling about all this throw it around the yard 40, 50 times. Mm-hmm. It's a much better idea in September than it is an idea in January. And I still believe in running the football, in part where I believe that there's something to be said for the fact of just beating the hell out of somebody. That matters. Like, there's a thing to it that I don't know how easily quantified it is, but I do think it's a thing. But I also think that there are quarterbacks, just because you're really good doesn't mean we need to be throwing the ball 40, 45 times a game with you. And there's right. something like Cam Newton, I think, is a great example of this, where if I'm with Cam Newton, when they hire Mike Shula, and Mike Shula ain't no great offensive coordinator, but I got it. We're going to pound the ball, and then we're going to run play action, and we're going to have this big old dude that can get any short yardage stuff that we need to get, and we can center the run game around him, but we don't have to throwing the ball with him 40, 50 times isn't the best way to use him. And I don't blame Pete Carroll if he looked at Russell Wilson and he saw him that way, because I tell you, the last couple of years of Russell Wilson ain't been that great. No matter what anybody tries to tell you, like, and I want to know what you think about this in terms of, like, relationship with his own team. The offensive lines in Seattle have not been great, but they haven't all been terrible. And they went out and they got him an all-pro caliber left tackle. And what you'll notice is, no matter how good or bad the line was, Russell Wilson took the same number of sacks.
Yeah.
Like, sacks are on the quarterback. And I can only wonder how tired the offensive line is for getting blamed for some of the things that aren't on them.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've gotten to the point, at least people who, like, study the advanced stats, we've come to accept that pass block win rate is a good stat and pressures is a good stat that you can determine offensive line play. But sacks, that's a quarterback stat. And we notice, like, quarterbacks, even if your offensive line is bad, getting rid of the ball, sacks is a quarterback stat. And that, I mean, it goes with his style of play. That's when you play the way that he plays, or that he has historically, when the best part of your game is the thing that Patrick Mahomes has mastered, but it's the improv. When that's the best part of your game, deep shots, which take time to develop, is the second best part of your game, you're going to get sacked. Like, it's just the way that it is. So if you look at when I was looking at the move that he's making, he's making a lateral move as far as offense is concerned. Like, the offensive line have identical pass block win rates. They have just about identical pressure rates, which are, the pass block win rates are middle of the league. The pressure rates are 31 and 32. And I think 15 and 16 from last year is the win rate. So, like, he's going there. And I don't think that Judy, Sutton, and Patrick is better than Metcalf and Lockett. So, like, it feels like a lateral move. The place where it might be an upgrade is Nathaniel Hackett. He hasn't been a head coach before, but maybe it's an upgrade if they bring the system that everybody is running, some variation of this Shanahan system, if they bring that to Russell Wilson and it makes his job easier, then maybe we see a better Russell Wilson. Because I will say that it felt like, while he didn't play well last year, he had an injury. The year before that, first half of the year, he was balling and he fell off. It does feel like, and this is completely anecdotal, that nothing's easy for him. And that's one of the things about these Shanahan-style offenses is Jimmy Garoppolo can ball in them things in the right situation. And that's what you really want. And that's the perfect example is what happened last year is that's why you have Matt Stafford. Like, another quarterback can get you to the playoffs and through the playoffs. Matt Stafford has the ability to have a end-of-game, game-winning drive. Russell Wilson does that too. So, like, I think that should be the goal. Not to win the MVP with Russell, but get us in close situations, which they did multiple times last year against good teams, including the Chiefs. And then they handed it to Teddy, to Drew Lock, and it didn't do what they wanted it to do. So it seems like a smart trade to me. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah, and that's a system that is in line with what I think is probably best to do with Russell Wilson. Run it a lot, and then you can take those deep shots, and when they're there, he's the dude that can get those. You know what I mean? So, like, it will be interesting to see how it plays out, because he decided he wanted to go into the Lions' den as far as divisions go.
We'll see what the Chargers do in the draft, but recently, at least the top of the draft, they've been killing it. We'll see what they do with all the cap space that they had. I think they signed Mike Williams to a long-term deal already. We'll see if they go anywhere else in free agency. But not only do they have an all-pro caliber quarterback on a rookie deal, they got an all-pro caliber safety on a rookie deal and an all-pro caliber left tackle on a rookie deal. Like, the time is now.
If only they weren't the Chargers.
Yeah, like that, that's
it. The only impediment there, if only they weren't the Chargers, we might view this in a slightly different context. But Russell got what he wanted, I suppose. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only way that I can look at it. He got what he wanted, and we're going to see how this ultimately goes.
Great place to live.
Yeah, I've been there. It's all right. Yeah. It seemed to be doing all right. My guess, like, by the way, for who I think is going to wind up in Seattle, Trubisky.
Yeah.
Of the quarterbacks who are legitimately available, he's probably the best option. Like, I don't think he's nearly as terrible as he was made out to be. I don't think that he was particularly well coached, but Seattle ain't going to ask him to do very much. There's going to be that. But again, he in that category that Josh Allen used to be in, where they need to call them Malik plays for Mitchell Trubisky instead of calling all these Mitchell plays and use the legs that might make him a little better.
Yeah, so, I mean, we got Jameis, Teddy, Mariota, Jimmy G, and apparently, so, like, we talked about that division. Apparently, Derek Carr might be on his way out, too. It seems like, from what I understand, the Raiders are looking around the division and it's like, oh, nah, we good. And the Colts, since they moved on from Wentz, could be looking at Carr. But I get where you're coming from with the Trubisky thing. Maybe he's the best available, but he better than people treated him, but he ain't it.
He ain't it, but that's what makes this move so wild for Seattle.
Yeah.
Where you'll be lucky if you can get Trubisky. The draft, look, by now in the draft process, people done normally start aligning themselves and making top 30 quarterbacks into top 5 quarterbacks. Like, normally that's what happens. They not even doing that this year. They just like, nah, man, I don't even see it. And then Seattle, they get back these picks, but that first round pick they get next year presumably isn't going to be a very high one, not from Denver. Like, I think you can reasonably expect that Denver's going to be over 500 toward the playoffs by having Russell Wilson. So it's not like they're getting some supreme pick. They going in this year without a quarterback. Even if I think Trubisky's better than people gave him credit for, if you tell me that that's your situation, I'm saying you ain't got no quarterback until proven otherwise.
Without a quarterback, without a pass rush, without a legitimate secondary, and without possibly the best linebacker in football, like, they're not going to be good. I mean, it don't really matter who they get. They're not going to be good. And Seattle has not drafted well recently. So get all the picks you want. If you're picking the wrong dudes, it don't matter. So I guess the organization sided with them. I'm not sure that was the smart move to make. We'll see what happens with Russell, but I guess you get more picks, gives you more shots at it. Maybe you won't mess it up. But I am interested in if Carr goes to the Colts, because Derek Carr is another quarterback who it feels like he is never properly rated, which is where everybody either thinks he's worse than he is or thinks he's better than he is. He's an average quarterback, slightly above average sometimes in my view.
Yeah, the problem with him is that how he could be better is fairly obvious. You just get the ball down the field more, man.
Yeah.
Right? Like you've heard those stories coming out about Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins, where he's just like, yo, he just won't throw the damn ball. Same thing Jay Gruden said about him. Kirk Cousins is like, oh, I'm never going to make any mistakes. And they're like, bro, why don't you do what I told you? Like, you know what's a mistake? Not doing what I say. It's good to be white, man. Like, that's what I think when I hear that. That's just white folks at work being like, oh, you said to do one thing? Well, I'm going to do something else because that's always worked for me. And I look at Carson Wentz and, like, correction, it must be great to be white. That dude had one of the worst seasons of all time in 2020. And he has got two different teams willing to give up capital in order to get him. The folks in Indianapolis basically were like, this dude's not going to get us fired. We're going to trade him again. And the folks in Washington were like, what else are we going to do? And they went and got Carson Wentz, who is a sneaky 29 years old, by the way.
I mean, what else are we going to do? There's lots else that y'all could have done.
Trubisky. Like,
Mitchell. Yeah. Jameis. Teddy. Mariota. I'm hesitant on Jimmy G, but the rest of those guys I mean, honestly, for the price too, I'd rather have, presumably all of them would be cheaper than this contract that Carson Wentz is coming on, and you wouldn't have to trade like legitimate draft capital. I don't think it was any first round picks, but this is the NFL. This ain't the NBA. Second and thirds and fourths, dumb fools play. So you are giving away opportunities, and I think some of their best players on that team are like mid-round picks. So like that's valuable capital they're giving away for a guy that I think we already know the answer on. And I know from what I understand, people I talk to in the Colts, is that part of the issue with him was the vax stuff with that team, was the vax situation, and maybe it caught up to him, and that's part of the reason why he had that really bad end of the season. But he was bad at other points throughout the season pre-COVID. But I think when the owner of the organization is looking at you like you jeopardizing this over your beliefs, I guess is the best way.
Yeah,
I can
put it.
Yeah,
they don't care about your beliefs.
That's the thing. And you remember when he was in Philly, part his beliefs, people speculated that his religious beliefs got in the way because he was preaching to people. He wasn't a part of the crew. And it's all speculation, but it's rare, or it's odd to me, that sometimes you get those speculations and then you're like, oh yeah, that's what people say when someone leaves somewhere. These are unique. Like, I ain't never heard the criticism, oh, no, he too churchy. Like, right. I've never heard that before.
In a league with, like, Josh Kitten and Josh McCown, we can go up and down. Reggie White, you know what I'm saying? Up and down the list. Like, one thing the NFL ain't short on is religious people.
We prayed before and after every single football game I played from college through my entire career. And it didn't matter who was on the team. My homeboys that was Muslim, they would just put their hands out and kneel down. Like, it is a thing. Football and church, they go hand in hand. So the idea that somebody could be too churchy for football, like feel like you too black for the Essence Fest, it's like an oxymoron to me.
Dude, but great to be white. When you said the thing is like, we think we know the answer on him. We do know the answer on him. He's 29 years old and he's not good.
He had an aberration of a great season.
And even that season, the film study guys would tell you what nearly as good as the numbers seem to indicate. But people are still holding out hope that he might be able to put together. Like, I think the stat that Football Outsider used that I checked at one time, that DYAR stat, and I looked at every quarterback who had had a DYAR as bad as Carson Wentz's, they were either like rookie or second year, like early in career, or guys who didn't get a chance after that. Like, if you were as bad as he was that year at the age that he was, it was a wrap for you.
The aberration year was built on like crazy luck and like converting third and longs at a rate that just was historic and no one ever does. And also being on a loaded roster that had a better offensive and defensive line than any other team in the league. And like I started with, just luck. And it's funny how we do with him. We call that an MVP caliber season. And the same thing for Josh Allen. Like, people who have not won MVPs but have played good enough in particular instances, we like consider him MVP caliber players. He ain't in the same conversation as Josh Allen or any of these other guys. And he has the scariest thing. It's that Jeff George, where you got an arm that sometimes, oh, you a high draft pick, that draft number matters, because he would not get a second chance if he had done this, if he wasn't a high draft pick, being 6'5 and white and having an arm that gets GMs aroused like that. You throw one of them. I was remember the Arizona game last year. He threw some balls in that game. Like, he was balling. And then he had the Jacksonville situation.
Yeah. And he can move.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was one of those coming
modern
out of school.
Quarterback.
You know, he went to the same school as Trey Lance up there. You know, it was obvious why somebody would roll with him. Like, even with Jared Goff that year, I watched Jared Goff play a game that last year he was at Cal. And I was like, oh, okay, I see why they're doing this. Like, that was the best that I could give you. I didn't know how good he was or wasn't. But I was like, oh, okay, I see why they're doing this. Now, Jared Goff, no, they bailed on him. Like, Jared Goff is actually the one that's looking around at Carson Wentz like, what is this?
That's a great point. I hadn't even thought about that.
The Rams had to trade another first-round pick just to give him away.
Jared Goff gonna call you like, but I'm white too.
And landed in two not-so-bad situations for Wentz, right? Like, Indianapolis was a good situation. And, I mean, if the Commandos were, like, a different organization, but the same team is set up, we'd be like, oh, pretty good situation for you there, Carson Wentz. Jared Goff is in Detroit shoveling snow.
The Commandos, I like that, by the way. I'm running with that one too. How could they mess? Like, I was somebody coming into this, like, it don't matter what they name them. Like, we'll get used to it. It'll be fine. But the Commanders is actually the single name out of all of them that I heard. I was like, actually, nah, you guys can't be like the Commies or the Commandos. Like, you actually somehow managed to mess this up. But anyway.
I thought about the Commies.
Oh, yeah. They're all types of. I saw it on the internet when it first happened. It's like, they somehow managed to mess this up, and they messed up this trade also, bringing in Carson Wentz. But he is not, I think general managers get aroused and excited about his ability and what they think they can do with him. And you said Indy was a good situation. Indy was a great situation. That was your guy, Frank Reich. He the one who made people think you was good. Offensive line, fantastic. All that stuff, good defense. Like, if you can't make that work there, I'm not sure what convinced Washington that they could get it done and why they would put themselves in this situation.
Why would they ever be so arrogant as to believe that they the ones that could figure something out?
This man, Frank Reich, took this dude to doorstep away from the Super Bowl and the MVP trophy. Then he brought him out there, and whatever happened with the Jalen Hurts draft pick or all the luck in his other season, whatever happened to him, he ain't that dude. If he couldn't do it with them behind Quentin Nelson, he not going to come down here and do it with a hurt Chase Young.
Oh, hold up, bro. Frank Reich basically came out and said, that dude about got me fired. But he was like, yo, I stuck my neck out for him. He didn't just say, like, yo, man, I thought it could work and it didn't. He says, I stuck my neck out for that guy. Frank Reich is hot. Like, and if I'm not mistaken, Frank Reich, he big on that Jesus too,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. He's still like, nah, man, I almost lost my job with Carson Wentz. And Washington is like, oh, I'll take him.
I stuck my neck out for you is a classic line. You have never said that to anybody that you were happy with. Like, but I stuck my neck out for you.
Right.
I have to work with these people.
Right. It never goes, yo, you know, I stuck my neck out for you and it really worked out well. Right? Like, it comes out as, hey, man, I stuck my neck out for you. That's either get it going or get gone. Those are your options when it gets to I stuck my neck out for you.
Oh, the great Terp Frank Reich. I want to hear the private conversations that he is having about him.
I love that it also seems very clearly that Chris Ballard and everybody else told Frank, if this don't work, it's on you. Like, it sounds like everybody in there was like, don't think we should do it. Don't think we should do it. And then Frank Reich went and stood on the table, right? He was like, no, I know what to do with him. And then got to the end and was like, yeah, I know exactly what to do with him. Sell this lemon to somebody else.
It feels a lot like the Russell Westbrook situation because to me, Chris Ballard has a good name. He was like the darling of the front office world. And he built up this beautiful roster. Then Andrew Luck retires and he's like, all right, well, we're going to figure it out. We're going to patch it together. And he did the smart thing. Bring in a cheaper vet. And he's just trying to make it work, treading water till we can find something. And then Frank Reich rolled into his office and said, I got an idea. And you could tell how that Ballard was never for it by the press conference that he did after the season was over. It didn't take much time for him to be like, yeah, everything's on the table. Nobody's safe. He wanted that boy gone.
Yeah, he's like, just so you know, you'll have to ask Frank. So Calvin Ridley, I don't think that there's really this larger extrapolation to this is what happens when gambling is legal. I don't think that's what it is. I think that this is what happens when people thought that players gambling was going to be eradicated by paying them more money, right? And so conversations that used to be prevalent in sports about gambling and gambling scandals, we haven't really had those. And so I totally see how Calvin Ridley could be like, I don't see what the big deal is. I bet on my team. I'm displaying confidence in them. And somebody be like, well, actually, the nuances of it is it can indicate inside information and da-da-da. Like, I can see all of that. I just think we need to stop saying that he made a $1,500 bet because he didn't make a $1,500 bet. He made a $12 million bet. The bet was not the $1,500 he put down.
Yeah.
The bet was the $12 million he stood to lose from this. This is the part of this that he didn't think out. If you are a house of any sort, a casino, a sports book, whatever it is, when you see a football player has bet on a football game, you got to call somebody immediately. And that's what I don't understand, how nobody told these fools that Just like, look, man, you sure can't do it on a computer.
Guys like to gamble. They find plenty of ways to gamble. Because Calvin Ridley was away for mental health concerns, I think that we give him a little bit more leniency, and maybe we should. But I will say, it ain't hard to find ways to gamble. Like, you can gamble on whatever you want to gamble on. You can't gamble on sporting events. If I remember correctly, you can't go into a sports book. You can't gamble on basketball or baseball. You can play blackjack, poker, whatever, craps, bourrée, spades. You can flip quarters. Like, you can do whatever you want. Like, if you have this need for that action, you can find it. So I appreciate people trying to defend the players at all turns. Like, that is generally the position that I take. But I am not expending any of my cape on this current situation. Like, bro, don't gamble. Don't bet on the teams. Like, it's a clear rule. It's obvious. It makes sense why it exists. It's not even like a smoking weed thing where I'm like, all right, we actually don't need this. Like, you can't have guys in a league gambling on something. You just can't. It's just plain and simple.
So here's where I am on the mental health thing. What we talking about here was stupid, which I did not think fell under the purview of the mental health stuff that we've been talking about, right? Like, I just didn't think stupid was on it. And he doesn't have to do this. But if he wants to tell us what exactly his mental health situation is and how it contributed to this gambling thing, I'm down to hear it. But you're going to have to tell me, because right now you just look like a dummy.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of dummies with mental health issues. And
exactly.
Calling out one ain't never precluded us from having an honest discussion about the other one. No, you just can't do this. And look, the only other person that I remember in these recent times to get himself in trouble over this gambling is Josh Shaw. Do you remember Josh Shaw?
I don't.
Okay, so Josh Shaw, I think they put him out for like 2 years because that fool registered for like a member's card at the MGM or one of those Vegas joints. And on the application, when they asked for your occupation, he put down football player. And he went and was like watching the game in the sports book. And the NFL was like, oh, no, homie, we got to get you up out the paint. But you will remember Josh Shaw. You just don't remember his name. But I bet you remember the story. Josh Shaw was a quarter at USC.
Yep.
And Josh Shaw had a situation where apparently he and his lady were having an argument that became spirited in some form of fashion. And somebody called the police. And this is like 2014. You know what it was in these streets. You know what I'm saying? So the cops don't run up. He didn't know what to do. And so he jumped out of a second floor window to escape. Or it may have been fourth floor. Either way, he jumped from high. He landed. He injured himself badly. And the problem was he was afraid of losing his scholarship at USC. So he needed to cook up a story. So what was his story? That his cousin or nephew was drowning in a pool and he saw it from outside the window. And so he jumped off the balcony to save the kid. And that was the story he told USC. And a USC, of course, heard a heartwarming tale. So what do? Call the Today Show. And so now this dude is all over the place and then got hemmed up because, you know, his story was fiction. And all I'm saying is, that's the other dude that I remember getting hemmed up on doing something stupid with the gambling by legal means in the NFL, which is to say, nah, man, what Calvin really did was just stupid, period.
Nah, I mean, I'm with you. And you can have an MGM card. You can go in there if you're an athlete. You can give them all your money. You can keep their lights on for months and months at the craps table. Roulette, you can play, you can pull slots. You can do absolutely everything except for bet on sports. When I used to play in Denver, I would go to Vegas often with my guys, bring my brother, and my brother's 2 years older than me, and we look somewhat alike. I told him, don't take your ass in the sports book. Like, we got the same last name. Like, we ain't going nowhere near the sports book. You want to bet on whatever you want to bet on, that's fine. But it seems clear to me. And as far as the mental health stuff is concerned, like, as I understand it, like, that stuff can be connected to a lot of your behaviors, and it's not always easily explained. So maybe this is a result of it, but I think it goes back to your other point, is that, okay, that's fine. We can keep that and understand it, and that can be true. But this might be hyperbolic, but prisons are full of people with mental health concerns. We are not here trying to treat all that. At least, hopefully, he is getting some treatment, and he has a year to get some real in-depth treatment to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, but I think what you touched on, you're right, that these different mental health things can obviously can lead to these behaviors, okay? But you can't get privacy and the benefit of the doubt at the same time. Whether people like it or not, I'm not the one who makes the rules here. You can't get them both. If you want the benefit of the doubt based on this, you're probably going to have to let me know a little bit more about what it is that you're going through. Or let the NFL, I guess, right? Because they're the ones who adjudicate the matters. But if you want me personally to care about what it is that you're going through, you can't just tell me I'm going through stuff. That's not enough. I don't hear enough. I'm going through something does not trump. That's some of the dumbest shit I've ever seen anybody do in my life. It just doesn't get there. But I'm going to say this. If you were to ask me to close my eyes and you told me somebody did something that stupid and then asked me, what team you think he plays for? It wouldn't take long. It wouldn't take long at all. The Falcons. That's who it would be. From the franchise that gave you the NFL Man of the Year soliciting a prostitute on Biscayne Boulevard. From the team whose quarterback was fighting dogs. Dogs, I tell you, dogs. Right? The only thing, it's a little disappointing in retrospect, that Bobby Petrino story with the motorcycle. I wish he'd done that while he played for the Falcons. It would have just added to the lineage of things, you know? This felt real Falcone.
I guess the Atlanta sports curse is lifted at this point because the Braves won, right? And the Hawks, they stink again, but they were good for like a hot second. But there's something going on in the Falcons building. They can't get right on all this stuff. Like, I don't know what it is, what wrongs in their history they need to right, but they got something going on. Because that, to your point, that's absurd. Those are three pretty outrageous, like, once aberrational type things. They all happened to them. Like, the dogfighting thing never happened before. The pre-Super Bowl thing, like, I guess other people had issues the day before the Super Bowl, but the prostitute part never happened before. And this gambling thing, like, it's...
Hold on. You just said the prostitute part.
Man of the year.
I was talking to a buddy who got some Seattle connections, and he asked somebody who played with Eugene about that. And this is what his response was. Basically, I haven't been that disappointed since I found out Santa Claus wasn't real. He was the last dude in the league that anybody expected such a thing would happen with. And it only happened when he played for the Falcons. And then he got his sleepy ass burnt on a deep route in that game. Because I imagine he had a hard time laying it down.
Yeah, it was a long night for my man. But in the gambling stuff, like, I hear people bringing up names like Paul Hornick. Like, it's not something that happens all the time. Like, it's so rare. And they all happen down there. One of the worst narcotics out there. I'm glad you got off it.
Yeah, dog. Like, that's, man. And, you know, they be like, yo, Bomani wish he could root for the Falcons. As if you could stop me. Why would I want to do that, right? Like, it's not like I got to put in an application and hopefully y'all let me in. Y'all ain't no fraternity. And y'all just, or y'all are like fraternities in the sense that I wouldn't want to be down with you lames. No way. Like, I just ain't really got no understanding. You just, like, I mean, and I used to do it. Don't get me wrong, man. I used to do it. It paid off a little bit here and there.
We live and we learn. You know what hit me? The last couple days been big football news days. And so my phone be blowing up with these alerts or whatever. I found out about Carson Wentz trade because I was on the internet looking around. Like, oh, they traded Carson Wentz. So while GMs in the league still believe in Carson Wentz, it's clear to me that ESPN has Carson Wentz in his rightful place. They didn't even buzz me on that. They were like, you'll find out about it when you find out about it, but this ain't urgent.
Yo, let me tell you my favorite ESPN thing right now. So I get up in the morning, I go to ESPN.com, and I check the headlines. When the Lakers lose now, they don't even say Lakers lose. You could tell the Lakers lost because they talk about something that happened after the game or like something, you know, somebody's quote or something that happened with the press or whatever it is. That's how you know the Lakers lost. It's not even eventful enough anymore to say that the Lakers lost, except if they lose to the Rockets, at which point you go to ESPN.com and it says Lakers lost to the Rockets. Otherwise, the Lakers lose it. We got to find some other way to make this compelling.
And LeBron passed up a layup. Like, it's bad out there, man. I don't know.
They got a good Russell Westbrook game and lost to the Rockets.
Did you watch the Lakers show yet? The HBO one?
I watched the first episode.
Your homeboy? Yeah, I watched it too. I liked it. I'm excited about the rest of it.
I want everybody to get as excited about that show as they possibly can, because the way it goes is at 9 o'clock, HBO shows Winning Time. At 10 o'clock, they run Winning Time back over. At 11 o'clock, they show John Oliver. At 11:30, they show your boy. So what I'm saying is, you just get yourself comfortable. You know what I'm saying? If you don't think you're going to be able to make it all the way to 11:30, I disagree. The time changes on Saturday night. You know what I mean? You're going to be a little more brisk, more spry than you might have been under those circumstances. I just think y'all need to watch this damn TV show. That's all I'm saying. Just give it a run. It's legitimately going to crack. Like, it's been hard for me to not, like, show you stuff from it. Because, like, what we got so far is legitimately good. Like, this is going to be what's up.
Yeah, I'm down. I can't wait. I'll be traveling early in that day, but I will be up late. It will be on DVR. I'm going to turn on all the TVs in my house. I don't know how ratings work, but I'm going to make sure that they count it here. I'm going to watch it on my laptop and my iPad. Log in. They releasing a podcast too? I don't know. I'm watching it everywhere.
I don't know if they doing that, but I will tell you this. You as a Terrapin, be sure to tell your Terrapin friends, because there's a Selection Sunday theme that I think a Terrapin will definitely enjoy.
Oh, is that the picture?
Yeah, what I sent you the picture of.
Oh yeah. I will let all the Terrapins know that it's gonna be a good Sunday evening. We not doing good in basketball right now.
Nah. But what y'all love to do is hate people. So y'all are the most hateful bunch I can think of.
Oh man, we get some good hate in on Georgetown right now.
Yeah, y'all out here diverting attention. Y'all over there.
Look at them.
yeah, I see you, man. But that is Dominique Foxworth. We do Foxworth Fridays every Friday. Check him out on Get Up. Check him out at Anscape. I forgot y'all got a new name now. We're going to talk about that later.
I got to change my tattoo.
But he had to Anscape. Check out everything he does. My brother, I appreciate you as always.
Always, man. Good luck. I can't wait.
Thank you, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain and Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. And thank you all for watching on YouTube. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.